Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents You Won't Feel a Thing, The Drama, Tragedy, and Comedy of Nursing by Sonia Matrevska, DNP, CRNA. Narrated by Sonia Matrevska, DNP, CRNA. To my nephews, Bri-Bri and Wesley, God gave you the opportunity to see the world differently. Thank you for opening my eyes to a whole new perspective. And guess what? I love letters, too. Love always, Teta Sonia. Acknowledgements. I'm keeping this one short and sweet. To everyone out there who has ever had the courage to speak when staying quiet is the easier road to travel, thank you for handling the bumpy ride. To everyone in healthcare, working like hell to make a mountain of miracles out of a mole's hill of resources, you're valuable. You're courageous. You're worth it. To every nurse who has ever endured the professional hardships we all know about but rarely discuss, this one is for you. Keep fighting as long as the fight lights a fire within you. And if or when it doesn't any longer, it's okay to walk away. You are so much more than your occupation. You are so much more than just a number. Your role is not your identity. Allow your truest self to shine brightly. We are all a part of a collective battle that requires us to band together as professionals. Be kind to yourself and to others. It's the only way to sustain optimism and longevity in this constantly wavering world. Love and light to you all. Sonia. Part 1. The Crash. Chapter 1. The Pyxis is Broken. On January 12, 2012, a part of me died. Whatever were to remain of my former self, as the person that existed before becoming a nurse, she is gone now. May she rest in pieces, the ashes of her burnt and scattered among the hummingbirds in a warm breeze on a summer day. Buried deep in the hollows of my fractioned brain, the former version of myself took shelter within the regions of my mind that would protect her from the onslaught of physical and emotional torment that life as a nurse would bring. You see, healthcare professionals possess a unique aspect of their brains. It is not one entity. And no, I'm not referring to the traditional view of left-sided scientific brain and right-sided creative mind. It goes far beyond two generalized boxes. Instead, our brains are made of pockets, not unlike the medication dispensary used to retrieve our morning round of tablets and elixirs and IV infusions. Each pocket contains a different version of the person we were intended to be in that very moment. But for the most part, you can't access multiple compartments at the same time. That would defeat the purpose of compartmentalization, wouldn't it? How foolish would it be for our defenses to allow us to feel sorry when we are accessing the bin reserved for strength? Or horror when what we need is stoicism? Or perhaps compassion when what we require, in certain instances, is to feel absolutely nothing? I have been a nurse for the last decade, and my arsenal of compartments has grown exponentially as my experience has evolved. The problem with the system of having a pocket for each of your problems, so to speak, is that you can't necessarily turn it off when you leave the hospital. Instead, you start to place your personal life into different pockets. Your friendships, your relationships, your interactions with complete strangers. Each box in your mental Pyxis machine becomes accessible only one at a time and in a limited quantity. Typical for pharmacy to not stock the machine just when you need it, if only it were that easy. So what happens next? Well, your bins start to empty. You hit the limits of compassion and understanding and joy, and you try to replace what you truly need with a generic version of yourself. the cheap stuff, the less potent brand of who you once were. You fake it. You stretch doses longer and longer. You slice your joy in half and try to spread it out over a period of days or weeks or months, but it isn't enough. It clearly isn't working, because once you are empty inside, even small doses of passion and excitement and wonder cannot fill the void. Burnout is a very real thing. When you start to experience the absolute leaden sense of dread that comes with a job in healthcare that makes you feel more like a number at a deli counter than a valued member of an interdisciplinary team, you have two options. You can stick around to your own detriment, or you can throw in the towel and walk away. I chose to walk away, and that decision plagues me every day. It's not that I didn't love the intensity and rigors of doctoral work. It's that I feel like I've failed the profession. Anyone who knows me well understands a few things about me, most notably that I struggle to keep my mouth shut in the face of injustice. I have taken exhaustive pains to attempt to advocate for the nursing profession in whatever small way I could, and one day those micro-level efforts entered a grand scale. I accidentally wrote and published a book that became a bestseller, and suddenly I had an audience, a large one, and one that seemingly depended on me to serve as a loud and resounding voice for the profession. And to be perfectly honest, that scared the hell out of me. It still does, because I am an introverted extrovert. I don't enjoy the spotlight. I don't relish attention. In fact, I have always said that people don't gravitate towards me for me. Rather, they are drawn to the way I make them feel about themselves. It's the Oprah effect. You can share tiny morsels of your own life as a way to bait others into revealing their own dreams, fears, and vulnerabilities. And I understand the irony in this. How is it possible that someone who wrote a book about her own experience, one that continues to expound upon her journey, doesn't actually share anything? Writing, for me, is an act of indecent exposure. The nudity is gratuitous, and I strip myself clean of my insecurities and doubt and painful self-awareness in order to tell a truth. I didn't enter this world believing I would be a storyteller. I never thought I would have anything of value to say, certainly not in a public scale. But here I am, bleeding onto the pages of a Word document once again, in hopes that perhaps sharing my story will help someone out there to tell their own. The problem I find, however, is this. I used to be an optimist. I used to believe in the power of positivity as a means to change a negative outcome. I used to believe that we are each the author of our own story, proverbially speaking. But I've seen some shit. I've seen the very worst in humanity. I've witnessed horrors that are seared into the corners of my brain and unfortunately have earned their own pockets in the apothecary of my mind. I have witnessed heartache and hatred and harrowing tales of heroism. I have lived in a state of limbo, a near literal purgatory that makes you question on a daily basis why God, if they're out there, would ever permit us to act in this way. I have felt sadness and anger and loss. I have felt the defeat of rejection. I have felt the unrelenting grip of nothing but a cold, bloated body long devoid of a soul. I have felt the dribs and drabs of kudos and gratitude in the form of empty phrases and banal gestures from the mouths and pockets of those who would never truly understand. And yes, I have felt power. I have felt omniscience. I have felt the blood-pulsing rush of adrenaline coursing through my body, transiently convincing me once again that those few and far between moments make it all worthwhile. But is it worth it, really? Was it worth the damage I have done to my own psyche to mainline those victories? Those times when a flat line is converted to the upstroke of a heartbeat on the monitor? Was it worth losing the glowing sense of optimism that I used to pride myself upon after bagging body after body and dimming my own inner light so that the darkness of reality wouldn't hurt my eyes? Was it worth shedding the young and excited woman I once was for the cooler, calmer version of myself, the version that requires so very much to become worried, even more to shed a tear. There have been moments in these last few years that I could not recognize myself. I cannot remember when the part of me that was so filled with joy and passion and excitement was replaced by someone who had done it all, seen it all, and had failed as a bedside nurse in the end. And yes, I failed. I couldn't hack it. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't stand the person I had become, so I was forced to make a change. I wish I had a charming tale about why I pursued a doctorate in nurse anesthesia after 5 years in the CTICU sucked me dry, but the reality stands. I kept running back to the bedside. I kept returning to the intensity and the clamor and the organized chaos of ECMO circuits and open chest washouts. I desperately wanted to be the quintessential ICU nurse. Sharp, sassy, organized, informed, the ultimate advocate for all parties involved. I never wanted to leave bedside nursing, but I had no choice. It was going to kill me. It was going to kill the woman I used to love, the bubbly, snarky, smart practitioner that treated her patients like they were her own family. And to this day, I am still working to resuscitate the pieces of myself that my time as an intensive care unit nurse stole from me. Does this sound dramatic to you? Good. It should. It is dramatic. It is tragic. It is comedic. It's Shakespearean theater mixed with Hippocratic ethics and gallows humor and some real-life This Ain't Television Grey's Anatomy shit. I bet you all know a nurse, and yet I bet you don't know a goddamn thing about them. I bet you think you know what their life is like because they share the ruin-a-dinner-party stories with you. But in reality, you have no idea what we endure. You have not the slightest clue how much we are all swinging along the pendulum between hurting and healing. You haven't the faintest insight as to how much the opposing burdens of fiscal responsibility and serving humanity come to a head and keep us up at night. And it isn't just nurses who are plagued by the woes of healthcare in a system that is so broken that it requires consultant after consultant to come in and provide metrics and data and algorithms to solutions as simple as adequate staffing, time away from the workplace, and mental health days. It's all of us who are fighting tooth and nail to protect our patients, yet grow colder and more distant shift after shift. It's the physicians, the technicians, the advanced practice providers. You cannot sustain the weight of the world on your shoulders and not eventually be inclined to shrug. What is my intention in sharing this with you? What is my purpose in writing this book, one that is clearly in stark contrast to my first piece? To be perfectly honest, I'm not really sure. It's been 4 years since I wrote my last book, and a lot can change in that span of time. Especially in the world of nursing, where time is most certainly calculated in dog years. I have had moments of burnout recently that brought me back to a mental place where I was at my very worst in the ICU. And it scared me. It scared me to believe that, perhaps, as a member of the healthcare profession, you can try to escape the struggles that plague you, but you will never win the race. It scared me to think that no matter your title, no matter your level, no matter your role, you will frantically pull from those compartments in your mind during the moments when you most need a hit of laughter or strength or joy. And before you know it, you're left feeling empty. You're left feeling numb. You won't feel a thing. That's the line I use on my patients these days, and I often take a moment to ask myself, is that more of a mantra than a promise? Am I saying it to my anxious patients, ensuring their comfort and security in my care? Or am I reminding myself, over and over again, that the only way to survive in the healthcare profession is to be totally anesthetized? Chapter 2. Liar, Liar. Have you ever had a patient that hasn't pooped in a fortnight, and you load them up with rocket fuel stool softeners and enemas and even stewed prunes, but when they actually have to take a shot at number 2, you flip them onto a bedpan and gently remind them, don't force it, It's not healthy to strain. That's precisely the type of problem I had starting this book. Maybe it's a form of self-preservation, but I dragged my feet to initiate this conversation. I used crappy excuses like, I'm in a full-time nurse anesthesia program, with intensity and rigors that consume every waking hour of my existence, to avoid writing. But guess what? It turns out that creating, for me, is akin to church or therapy or, dare I say, breathing oxygen in an effort to expel the metabolic byproducts of carbon dioxide. Shout out to my graduate education for that one. In other words, I cannot not write. I may not share everything that comes out of this twisted little synaptic labyrinth of mine, but writing is a way to sustain my sense of balance. Some people turn to scripture. I would rather create my own. That being said, I convinced myself after writing my first book that if I forced number two, it would turn out to be shit. And while I'm not suggesting you take this sentiment so literally that you assume someone took a dump on my keyboard, anyone who submits to public exposure understands the anxiety associated with public acceptance. Beyond this, though, is that I pride myself on remaining honest with all of you. For me, it's authenticity that forges a connection amongst total strangers, that allows us to share our emotions, permits us to feel a ripple of understanding between each other that starts with skipping a single rock of candid conversation on the murky water. Writing is its own form of torture, and there is no greater pain than bloodletting onto a keyboard and expecting public perception to stitch the wounds. Could it be possible that the success and feedback from my first book would make my work a one-hit nursing wonder? Have I exhausted all of my nursing knowledge and insight in 164-page paperback, rendering myself incapable of writing on the subject matter ever again? Is there anything left to say about the nursing profession and the members of the clan that hasn't already been said? More importantly, is what needs to be said uncomfortable? Is the conversation a complicated one? Is this no-holds-barred sentiment likely to get me blacklisted or canceled by my peers? I mean, probably. But as a rehabilitating adrenaline junkie, I think I'll take my chances. I've grown a garden of fucks this past year, and I've decided I can only distribute my harvest to those most deserving. And that leaves zero fucks for those who create a drought in my energy. My positive vibes come at a premium, and I will do anything in my power to protect those remaining glimmers in my aura. Some days, even desperately. My fucks are collected, washed, and placed in a basket for only those who desire motivation, inspiration, and some cautionary information. Everyone else gets no fucks. You can go to Whole Foods and get your own. Now then, let's get back to the business of the business. Being a nurse isn't easy. If you've decided to enter this hard-knock life for the money, you probably should have used your college tuition to hedge your bets and start a meth lab instead. After all, you've got extensive scientific training and would reap the benefits of exciting adventures with interesting people. But since we all know how Breaking Bad turned out, maybe let's just cut to the chase. Nobody becomes a nurse for the money. And if they do, well, they quickly learn how hard we work for every penny earned. As the seconds and minutes and hours whiz by, we bob and weave our way to a paycheck that never quite feels as meaty as the fatty work made it seem. Consider this. You've graduated from nursing school, worked in the field for any given period of time. Let's say months, years, maybe even decades. And maybe you're ready for a change of scenery. Or perhaps you're not going anywhere, but feel stuck in a rut. The nursing hamster wheel is spinning, shift after shift, and you're still where you were a year ago. Maybe you just joined and need some sunshine and hope. Maybe you want to quit and are in search of a reason to stay. Well, I hate to break it to you guys, but I can provide absolutely zero guidance on the matter, since I have been trying to find myself in the nursing arena for the last decade. That's right, I've written a best-selling book for newbie nurses without a single advanced degree, and here I am on my own journey toward what comes next, attempting to lead the blind like some Stevie Wonder of the nursing profession. I don't have a goddamn clue, if we're being perfectly honest, what exactly makes you tick. I'm not sure what gives you satisfaction. I don't know what drives you or excites your passion or makes you wake up in the morning and high-five yourself in the mirror. Likewise, I don't want to scare you, but I'm not here to sugarcoat shit for you. I've gone through some of the hardest moments of more than 3 decades thanks to the nursing profession. I want you to pursue it, but I also need to heed caution. Nursing is an emotional vampire. The more you give, the more it will take. More to come on that matter. For starters, I want to lay out what this book is not. This is not a book about how to format your resume. There are plenty of valuable resources in the form of books, websites, and influencers who will happily teach you how to edit your CV. I am not one of those resources, so please stop DMing my Instagram account asking me to edit your resume for you. I am really freaking busy, guys, okay? Like, I want to help, but there is no time. Whew. Okay, sorry about that. This is not a study session for your boards or certification exams. The best advice I can lend you on this matter is stop changing your damn answer. Your first choice is probably the best choice. This is not a how-to guide for getting into graduate school. In fact, it very well may be the best way to get kicked out of school. But here's to publishing after graduation. And this book in no way suggests that one particular path is best or most beneficial to anyone. What this is, and I think I need to make this clear for a reason, is a looking glass toward yourself instead of a window into your future. I've written before about the importance of taking care of yourself from a professional standpoint. My goal is to bring it up a notch because we all so desperately need it. Whether you're a student nurse with a mountain of deadlines ahead of you or a stressed out seasoned member of the profession, you understand that we as nursing professionals are notorious for putting ourselves last. We are the ultimate I'm finers. We I'm fine our way through illness and infirmity. We I'm fine our way through days and nights, weekends and holidays. We I'm fine our families, and we I'm fine our friends until we finally convince ourselves that we're okay, even when we're very much not fine, in every way not okay. And that's okay. Seriously, it is. I mean, it's not really. It's a huge problem and a systemic one, but the first step is addressing it. If we say it out loud, if we talk about the issue, at least we can work toward bringing a solution to light. I will be the very first to tell you that I don't have some magic bullet. I don't know a quick fix to help the nursing community step out from the pile of emotional rubble under which we're buried and transform into happy, productive, and balanced professionals. But I'll be damned if I don't at least share with you guys where I've been, how I've struggled, and my efforts to rise up, pebble by pebble, from the rocky nursing bottom. Yeah, I know. This is a lot already. It's heavy. It's deep. It's a tough pill to swallow. It's a potassium tablet without the applesauce chaser. You were expecting movie references, weren't you? Crude humor, poop jokes, snark and satire. Don't worry, that will come. But this time it's more than humor. This book, it's not funny in a slapstick way. Rather, there is humor found in lunacy, laughter through tragedy. Because while we crack jokes and laugh at memes and giggle endlessly at the fact that if misery loves company, it's essentially married to nursing, well, not all of our problems can be solved with laughter. Not every burden can be eased with humor. Not every flashback or horrible memory or panic attack or pang of regret can be healed through the age-old best medicine. Nursing is real, and reality isn't always funny. This is your sucker punch. It's going to hurt. You're going to cry. But my hope is that you stand back up, look me square in the eye, and tell me that reality hits like a little bitch. Chapter 3. Not in Kansas anymore. My first book was Foreplay. This is the real deal. This is where the action happens. This is where you move from a taste of what goes down as a pure and virginal nurse and get freaky deaky with professional realities. These concerns don't only impact the nursing professional at the bedside. They also affect the quality of care delivered to our patients. I want to preface this deep dive into healthcare by reminding all of you to take a moment and reflect upon why you chose this storied profession in the first place. Okay, that's enough. Here comes the sucker punch. A few years ago, I purchased a pair of stark white nursing shoes for a project I was working on. They were crisp, clean, pure, representative of everything Florence Nightingale would have wanted in professional footwear. Yet beneath the outward sheen, they were ugly as hell. No, seriously, I wore them in my ICU with a pair of white pants and was roasted for the duration of my shift. Nancy Nurse, 1960 called and wants your outfit back. Nursing student, someone even offered to pay me to throw them into my locker and never bring them out again. My ugly-ass white clogs are a symbol of where the nursing profession stands today. While it has a solid foundation, there remains an unsavory side that harkens to the profession's past. And so for me personally, this is where my struggle with being a professional nurse comes into play. As a second career nurse, I didn't always understand the appeal of the nursing world. Sure, I didn't dream of a white cap and stethoscope as a child, and my formative years proved that I was merely a typical narcissistic type A teenager with a photographic memory. Nursing wasn't even a thought, much less an afterthought, until I reached my 20s. And even still, I wasn't quite sure what a professional nurse did until I actually became one. Being shaped by my own personal experiences with family illness, I got a sense of what the core values of nursing encompassed: compassion, empathy, kindness, respect. It would take further research and insight into the field for me to understand the complex clinical and academic components that blend the art and science of the profession. Upon entering nursing, I possessed a sense of childlike wonder. With every new piece of knowledge, I felt further entranced by my role at the bedside and worked to learn and grow with every opportunity. My, what a difference the better part of a decade can make. While I still consider myself profoundly invested in caring for my patients and growing as a professional at any given chance, I see the nursing world differently today. I see the business angle. I live the money matters. I have been taught lean strategy and economic theory as a way to navigate the ever-evolving healthcare platform from the bedside. And while I'm business savvy enough to understand that the bottom line is always going to be relevant if people want to get paid and operate at a certain standard, I'm also realistic enough to understand that it's often nursing that feels the financial blows. Nursing salaries account for astounding percentages of the operating costs of hospitals on average. And while nursing salaries pale in comparison to physician colleagues, it takes many more nurse bodies to staff and care for patients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Not only is nursing expensive, oftentimes what is of greater concern is that it's expendable. When push comes to shove, nursing will be asked to tighten up, pare down staffing, and portray a team player mentality in the face of sick calls, leaves, and position vacancies. Does all of this sound familiar to you? It should. Whether you work in a world-class medical teaching facility or a podunk community center, slashing nurse staffing and resources in the name of preserving the bottom line is nothing new to the profession. And yet, what I ask myself every single day, amid the countless stories and messages and emails and texts from friends and colleagues and total strangers, is this: why do we put up with this mistreatment? Perhaps, even more importantly, how do we even begin to fix a fractured system? Chapter 4. Well, for starters. Well, for starters, we need to spark the conversation. There are a million and one reasons to remain quiet, and I absolutely respect that. But there are over 3 million of us. There are institutions across the country that view open dialogue about system issues as complaining and see basic occupational rights as privileges. Many voice concerns about repercussions of workplace whistleblowing and feel compelled to grin and bear it in order to pay the bills and put food on the table. I have no doubt that un- and underprotected nursing staff.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?